Welcome to Critical Issues Commentary, the radio ministry of Twin City Fellowship. I'm Bob Dewey, and I'll be your host for the next half hour. Today I'm interviewing Brian Flynn, author of Running Against the Wind, The Transformation of a New Age Medium, and his warning to the church. I believe this is part four in the series of radio broadcasts. I'm interviewing Brian about his book, so we're working our way through and discussing the contents of his book chapter by chapter today. We are in chapter four, and this chapter is about where Brian learned how to have spirit guides. By the way, welcome, Brian.
Thank you for the invitation. Appreciate being here.
Okay. Now, last week, you introduced an idea of running your energy.
Correct.
And you're going to be talking about that more in this chapter. Why don't you rehearse that whole thing? What's this running your energy? What did that mean?
It was really a series of meditative processes where I would bring myself into a state where I could be open to spirit guides to speak through me. It was first by centering myself with the Earth's energy, then the psychic energy from the heavens, and then there was about six or seven steps after that. And it was at this point that you would really be open to the voices that could come into your head that would give you guidance or guidance to another person while doing a reading.
So what's the difference between centering in that way and the TM that you were talking about earlier?
Not really much of a difference. I think it was just a variation of the methods. What I've discovered in my research is that on one hand, you had transcendental meditation, which is a word that's repeated over and over again. But also in any techniques that are similar to self-hypnosis, it could be something as easy as concentrating on an object, staring at something, breathing, concentrating on your breathing. So they're all, in a sense, a form of mind control that at the end of it, your thoughts are pushed aside. As I would describe to people this method, one of the things that they taught us in class was somewhat of an ethical practice was to, you know, not have your thoughts interfere with the reading because you didn't want to interfere with that reading mm-hmm. with your own thoughts. So what you're really doing is pushing your own will aside. Once your thoughts are pushed aside, you think of it, of course, that I didn't think that that was anything bad. I was just trying to do an accurate reading. But really what you're doing is you're giving your will away. You are giving your ability to discern away. In trade, you're going to get the spirit guides to speak more accurately through you and give you more guidance into your own life.
It seems to me, then, that the technique isn't the key thing as long as it works to get you into that state.
Right.
Where your mind is not interfering.
Yeah, it's really, there's varying methods, but they all are a form of self-hypnosis, which brings you into an altered state of consciousness where your own thoughts are simply pushed aside. So that is the goal, no matter what form of meditation. All of the Eastern meditations have one thing in common. It is to eliminate thought.
Okay. So when you're talking about running your energy, that's just another way of doing that.
Correct.
Okay. So when you went to a class, you were told that no psychic ability was needed. Now, why would they say that? Because it seems to me mm-hmm. that when you see these like 1-800 numbers or these infomercials, they're claiming that there are these people that have this psychic ability that are special and that it's worth paying money to talk to them.
Correct.
But then when you went and took a class, they say you don't need any psychic ability.
No, you didn't. That was one thing that I found surprising was that I didn't need anything because all that I was really doing was going through this meditative practice where spirit guides would speak through me to the person I was doing a reading for. So that didn't require any ability of my own. Now, some other psychics or mediums will claim that they've had this talent from the beginning. But I think that they were just simply possessed early on. Most of the people that I've read about that become mediums usually had some type of occult influence early in their childhood. I think it was John Edward who said that he had an aunt who was also a psychic and predicted to him when he was very young that he would become a psychic.
Hmm.
So I think that it's a form of possession, not some particular ability that they're born with.
Okay, so some people had these spirit guides because that's just the state they were in, possessed.
Yep.
And others had to go ask for to get possessed.
Correct. Yeah, so I went and asked for it.
It seems rather ironic when you think about it, doesn't it?
I know. I didn't know that's what I was asking for.
Yeah, because you thought
it was going to be something good.
Yeah. And as you said in your seminar many times, and we've discussed here, the whole idea is if it feels good, it seems good, it solves problems.
Yeah, it has to be God. God wouldn't do something bad like that. Why would he put us into that position unless it was for something for good?
Right. Okay. So that was the deception. Now, you told a story about how you went through this process and these multiple spirits began to appear to you?
Correct. How we identified them was our teacher asked us, you know, to picture a doorway and in our mind. And as we did that, each one of my spirit guides would appear in the doorway and then move on. And there was various ones. There was one that just like any casual guy actually gave him a name, Phil. And then there were ones that were female, some that were more spiritual, some were old, some were young. There were all sorts of different ones. And when I asked, well, why would I need so many? And my teacher explained that, well, not every reading you do is going to include that particular spirit. It might be different ones for different situations.
Now, did this work for all those students in that class?
They all had the similar experience. They all had different guides. They explained what each of them looked like. And my teacher said, you know, really don't concentrate too much on what they look like. It's just an appearance so you can identify them.
Wow. So in this case, there wasn't anybody that took the class that said it didn't work for them.
No, yeah, every single one in the class experienced the same thing that I did.
Wow. The reason they did was they had learned this meditative technique.
Correct.
To get into an altered state.
Yeah, if you're in an altered state of consciousness, you're open to these spirit guides. Every single one was open to them.
You know, as I was reading your chapter today, chapter 4, to get ready for this radio broadcast, the thing that came to my mind was this is so much like some Christian books that I read. And the only difference between your experience and some of these Christians who claim to have this ability to talk to Jesus was that the spirit that appeared to them went by the name of Jesus.
Right. Right. And just as my teacher said, it doesn't matter what they look like. It's just a way for you to identify with them.
Wow. So we'll talk about that as we get toward the end of your book about the Christian versions of this. But I think people ought to be aware that not every being that comes to you that's a spirit being is good.
Right.
And even if it comes with a familiar name like Mary and Jesus.
Correct.
Jose Silva, for example, who had a version of this in the 80s called Silva Mind Control.
Right.
He claimed really special status because he had two spirit guides. One was Mary and one was Jesus.
Well, man, he hit the jackpot.
Okay. All right. Now, in your book, you talk about how these experiences in the readings actually did help people.
Oh, of course. I met with a friend of mine that she wanted some guidance in her life, and we went through the reading. But the most interesting part of the reading was when she asked me about a friend of hers. Now, I didn't know this friend. I didn't know anything about them, but I did know that the person I was doing the reading for was very concerned about her. And she just was very vague and said, you know, tell me about this person. You know, I really need some guidance about her. And in the book I describe, you know, she just looked like a very, like in a cartoonish character was the image I got, very crumpled up. And that image said to me, this person is hurting in some way or another. And I asked her, I said, well, is this person in pain or is there something really going on that's negative for this person? What's going on? The way I sometimes explain this, and I think a lot of people look at mediums or psychics that all the time they're being fraudulent. Yes, there are fraudulent people that sometimes they ask questions to draw information out of you, not because they're being dishonest, but I think it's, I equate it to be if I'm looking through a scrapbook that you did years ago, I might ask, well, why do you have this picture in here? What does this signify? So that's what it's sometimes like. So I asked her, what is this picture? You know, here's what I'm seeing. Can you explain what this is? And what she explained to me is that this person had terminal cancer. And what she wanted to know was she going to recover? And our method, of course, when you're going to perhaps share negative information, well, what happened was I asked the question, and in my mind was an image of a black swan at night slowly but surely going across this pond and then disappearing underneath the water. Well, what does that say? Didn't need a word in my mind. It was death.
Okay.
That was a picture of death. Before I shared this with her, I looked above her head, If there was a rose standing up, I could tell her. If it was down, I was to not say anything.
No, you learned this from your teacher?
Right. If negative information, you just say, you know, I really don't know at this time. So she had the rose standing up. So I shared with her that I don't believe this person is going to make it. And 2 weeks later, she died.
Wow.
Now, before I give anyone the impression that these spirit guides know the future, they do not. I think it was just a fairly good summation based on the person's present health. I think it was somewhat of a guess, but an educated guess. These spirit guides do have knowledge, and knowledge that would go beyond you and I. Sometimes they have direct knowledge of an occurrence that's going on present, but they don't have future knowledge. But the knowledge that they do possess sometimes means that they can get things more right than you and I could.
Okay. So that's why that was able to work. Now, you told another story that was about some lady who was thinking about getting a different boyfriend because she was giving up on the one she had.
Yeah, it was a woman I worked with, and she was very concerned about a relationship. And this time it was my spirit guide who was the female, and I later named her Miriam, or that's what the name she wanted. And I got the image in my head that she definitely wanted to get married, but she wasn't really sure about him. And so she was at the time thinking of maybe moving on to someone else, or maybe I think she already had in some ways. And the message I got was that, here's number one, don't worry, this guy is going to marry her. She should not worry. And then the second message came was that, by the way, she's actually looking to some other guy at this point. So I said to her those two things. And the second one, I told her to stop seeing this other guy and wait on your present boyfriend. That really shocked her because that was information I didn't know. That gave me instant credibility with her because I picked something out of nowhere and said, you know, this other guy you're with, you shouldn't be with.
Wow.
And the look on her face was shocked, like, there's no way you could have known that. So right there, at that moment, I have complete credibility from anything I say from that point forward. And it turned out to be good. She did stay with the present guy, and he did end up asking her to marry him. So how could that be an evil thing?
Yeah, isn't it amazing when you think about how deceptive that is? Other than the grace of God, how would anybody ever get out of that?
Right.
Because you don't have any reason to think it's a bad thing.
No.
Other than from what I'm reading in your book, it wasn't really helping you personally any.
And there was a Christian friend in my life at that time, and sometimes I'd share stories like this, but her view was she was shocked. She was horrified by it. And I kept on thinking, what is wrong with her? Look at what a good thing I'm doing. How could she think that this is bad?
Right. So that's the delusion. And
that is the deception.
Listeners, the spirit world is real. It's very delusional. And the only way we can be sure about what the truth is that if an authoritative person from God was sent to tell us the truth, and that person is Jesus Christ, who spoke, mm-hmm. and whose words we find in the New Testament. But these experiences can be very delusional.
And the purpose, of course, is that these people become more dependent upon me for their guidance than ever seeking the truth of the Lord.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that one of your spirit guides told you that you're going to be wealthy if you just trusted the universe.
Yeah, I trusted the universe, okay. Well, that was the other thing that I think really hurt me financially. I mean, I made my own financial mistakes. I can't blame everything on the devil, right? So I wasn't doing that, but really what it did is it pushed both myself and my wife moving forward on a failed venture. We just kept on thinking, if we keep on going, all the spirit guides are telling us, you keep with this, you keep with this, everything's going to turn out great. It didn't.
It didn't. So instead of using your rational mind to analyze what you could know
yep.
and make decisions, you're following these spiritual voices instead.
Right.
You know, I know Christians that do the same thing.
Yep, they sure do.
They believe in the gospel of wealth, and if they just keep giving more money and pressing ahead, God's ready to make them wealthy at any time.
Yep,
or they get words from prophets or whatever.
It's the same delusion.
Yeah. I noticed in your book you mentioned that your teacher would say, stop analyzing and start trusting your feelings.
Right.
That's an interesting thing. We were talking about that. I did a radio show earlier, a live one earlier today. We were talking about false prophets. And one of the things that is remarkable is that a lot of really bright people get made stupid by false doctrines.
That's a good line. It's true.
Because in every case, whether it's Christian version of delusion or the one that you were in a New Age, God has given us a rational mind, and he allows us to use general revelation. We can study the creation, we can make our plans, and we can decide what the risks are and make decisions and go forward.
Correct.
But when we start thinking that there's some secret, you know, like the spirit guide is going to give me the magic bullet for wealth, or some prophet from God is going to tell me what stock to invest or what to do, that's where people get derailed.
It's true. You know, I was really an odd person to be in the New Age because I am a very analytical person. I really use my rational wisdom to make a lot of decisions. And I kept on trying to figure this all out. I was trying to analyze it all the time. And my teacher insisted, this is the reason you're struggling, is that you simply will not let go and just let your feelings go. You know, this is a very common thought process today. You know, stop thinking. You're in your head too much. You need to get out of your head. Just let go and the flow will come and then everything will work.
Yeah, you hear that all the time. And certainly in this postmodern distrust of anything rational and the idea that science can't tell us anything about the universe, logic isn't valid.
Nope.
So you get in a sea of mysticism, subjectivism. But the fact is, we're still living in the real world. And the problem with this whole approach is that there's three types of knowledge I'd like to identify based on Deuteronomy 29:29. The secret things belong to God, but the things revealed are for you and for your children. So the revealed is what God has spoken. That's our scriptures.
Right.
Then there's general revelations. The heavens declare the glory of God. We're allowed to learn a task or a trade and to study the universe that God put us in using our five physical senses and our rational mind. And humans are very clever. They build skyscrapers and
incredible things.
Put satellites out in orbit, all based on logic and science. But that third area of knowledge, the occult, the secret spiritual knowledge that's not revealed and cannot be accessed by any normal means, that's what everybody wants.
It's true.
They want what they can't have. And now we have whole culture of people who's rejecting the two valid types of knowledge. They reject the word of God because it's the written words, and words can't convey meaning. We can't know any of these things or whatever. And then science is 18th century enlightenment, rationalism. It really doesn't work either. So, for example, in the emergent church, all they're left with is what really we can't have, which is mystical knowledge.
Correct. And that was my desire, was to let go of this so I could do a better job. There was one class where I was doing a past life regression for one of my fellow students, and I was putting my hands on the back of her shoulders, and I was trying to pick out what her past life was, and I was really having a hard time. I was trying too hard, and my teacher came up behind me, and she put her hands on my back, and she was doing her type of meditation on me. And then I slowly, slowly let go, and that's when the images came to me.
Wow.
So that was quite a remarkable class.
So in a sense, you're systematically being taught not to think and not to use your rational mind.
That's correct. That is the whole purpose. But there's always good reasons for it that you go along with it, because there's some reward in it.
Right. And then you talked about, I thought this was ironic, the ethics of psychic readings.
That's what I was just referring to. Here's a driving force to have ethics would be, I don't want to interfere with the reading. I don't want my prejudice to interfere. If it was someone I was doing a reading for that I knew very well, my own thoughts and ideas about that person may interfere. So therefore, I have to remove my will. I have to remove my rational thought process and allow the spirit guides to speak more clearly through me so that I can give you a better reading.
I think there's a amazing irony in the whole thing. Now that you know what the truth is and you look back at it, as I was reading your chapter, I thought it's really ironic that if somebody comes to speak to a demon, the ethical thing is to let the demon speak. But are they really better off?
No, of course not. Like I said, the reason you're willing to give up your rational thought process is that there is some reward in it. And isn't that what Eve was fooled into?
Yeah, absolutely. This goes all the way back to the garden.
Absolutely. That secret knowledge
there's knowledge,
was promised.
Yep, God's withholding something from you, and if you had it, you'd be benefited.
Yep.
And so that's what drives people to this day, seeking that knowledge that God hasn't given them. Now, where did this land you and your wife when you put yourself in the hands of the universe and trusted?
Yeah, well, we got divorced. Due to the bankruptcy, we had to sell our house and my car. And so even though I was in touch with my spirit guides and giving me wisdom, I lost my wife, I lost my house, I lost my car, and filed for bankruptcy.
In your book, you're talking about you went back and asked, well, why did all this happen at your class with the other psychics? And you were told, well, sometimes the universe beats you up to get your attention?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I gave myself over to the universe, and what did I gain? You know, I got beat up for it. Well, sometimes the universe teaches you a lesson. Well, gee, thanks for the lesson. Now what?
Well, the whole thing's so ironic. I know people think this way because I was witnessing to a lady once who went to the Christ Universal Church. I may have told this before. Hmm. And she told me the same thing. I've put myself in the hands of the universe. And I said to her, the universe is impersonal. How can that which is impersonal actually care about you?
And also, the universe is dying and decaying, and it won't be around all the time. So I wouldn't put my mortgage in the universe.
Right, but so this whole Eastern thing makes it appear that the universe is some sort of a living being.
Right. It's really a very contradictory philosophy, where Hinduism, monism, believes that God is impersonal. Yet I don't think that idea really works for the real human mind, because we end up personalizing it. I know many New Agers who in the morning they're meditating to an impersonal universe, but then later they're looking for answers and voices in their head from the same universe. That's a personal. If it's speaking or responding to thoughts or questions, that makes that universe personal. So they're constantly mixing up personal and impersonal all the time.
Okay.
It's a complete contradiction.
Well, probably the demons are making it seem personal.
Well, yes.
Because they are, but they're evil.
They are personal. But what?
But that's not the universe.
So how can you believe that the universe is impersonal, and yet there's spirit guides that are personal that are telling you these things? It's a mixed up thing. But the reason that they do it is that they've never truly stood back and examined it long enough to realize it makes no sense.
I think that's important to realize, is that people can take a contradictory, irrational position, and if they're not challenged about it, they can just live with their irrationality. I know another person I was witnessing to that was into this stuff was saying, well, all religions are true. That's what she said.
That's a very common thought.
Yeah, a lot of people think that all religions are true. So I said, oh, well, what you just said has to be false. She said, well, how dare you? I said, I'm telling you, logically, what you said has to be false. Let me show you why it has to be false. Monism, which is pantheism, basically reality is just one. God is in all. God is all. God is all there is. And so there's no distinction between the creation and the creator.
Correct.
There's just God. I said, that's what Eastern religion believes. Now, the Bible says that God eternally existed for all eternity, and that he created the universe out of nothing, and that God is transcendent. He's not tied to his own creation. He's not handcuffed by his own creation. He's sovereign, and he's a personal creator God who's not tied to the universe. He cares about what he's created, but he's not what he's created. Now, those two things are antithetical.
That's correct.
They might both be false. One might be true and the other might be false, but they cannot both be true, so you can't say all religions are true.
And here would be my response as a New Ager. Well, see, you're trying to define God, and God is just undefinable.
Okay. So
that's their kind of rational excuse that they dream up off the top of their head.
God is undefinable, then he can't be discussed.
There you go, using logic again to my irrational belief system. Bob, you just got to feel it.
I get it.
You know, you're
so.
Trying to analyze God.
It felt good. It's all problems that must be from God.
Yeah, so they reject that type of rational thought. That just that can't be something that they can do. It is really against their religion to engage in rationalism.
Wow. Well, you know what? It's still valid because it's the way God created us. We need to use it.
Amen.
Use logic. And that's going to be our next chapter, by the way, is that somebody finally did come to you with reason and evidence.
That's right.
So these spirit guides, as you mentioned earlier, they ended up giving themselves names.
Right.
Of course, you probably didn't know this at the time, but the Bible talks about familiar spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And a familiar spirit is a spirit you made friends with. That's precisely what you were doing.
Yeah, I was, in many ways, a willing possession. I know when people think about possessed, they think it's an odd behavior. But I was a possession of theirs. I thought that they were working for me. I thought I had the power, but really the power had me.
Now, in the Bible, it talks about evil spirits, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, why would somebody willingly ask to have an evil spirit?
Because they don't believe that there's evil.
Oh.
See, I didn't believe in demons. That was just mythical. And Satan was just... that was just fantasy. There's no such thing as Satan. It was just made up by Christians.
So then what made you think that these spirits were good?
Because they liked me. They did good things for me. They told me the things I wanted to heal. They told me I was a good person and I needed to just relax more and all these wonderful things. I mean, I did my meditation twice a day in which they would give me advice. How could it possibly be that they were evil? And at the same time, I'm getting reinforcement from people that are getting my readings, and they have a positive experience.
So everything was positive except for your own life.
Yeah, my life was actually horrible.
Wow. And you can see how people are in bondage. And, you know, some of our listeners may have friends that are into the New Age, that are into these things. But one of the things that has come through in your story, Brian, is that God kept sending Christians. In this chapter 4, you told your Christian friend about how these spirit or these psychic readings were going so well. What was her reaction?
She cringed. She was one of the first people that befriended me that didn't give me kind of bash me over the head. I'm going to hell. You know, I'm you know, possessed by Satan type of attitude. She remained my friend, even though I knew she disagreed. And when I started sharing a couple of stories with her, I could tell that she wasn't just, it wasn't that what I was telling her was offending her or her thoughts. It was more or less, she was worried about me, that she was concerned. It wasn't a criticism of my behavior. It was just fear for my behavior.
Hmm.
And I could tell that this was scaring her for me. That she thought that this was damaging to me. And that really kind of stuck with me. I was like, gosh, she really cares. She's really thinking that this is a bad thing. Although she didn't say it, she didn't have to.
Yeah. It's hard to hide that reaction. That lady had told me that she was going to this Christ Unity Church and putting herself in the hands of the universe. I didn't immediately just tell her how bad that is.
Right.
But I just sat there and kind of had that same reaction. She said, well, I can see you think that's bad. So when she said that, that's when I came back and said, well, the universe is impersonal.
Yep. And she later, actually, she gave me a book on Satan because I'd asked questions about it. And guess what? I didn't read it. I don't think I wanted to know that information.
You didn't want to know that it was Satan that was doing these things. So you ended up divorced. And so what did you do? You lost everything?
Mostly, yeah. I didn't even have a car, so I moved in with a friend of mine that I really didn't know all that well at work and tried to put the pieces of my life back together, but it was the same friend that invited me to come to church. And I think at that time I was in such a low point, I don't think I had the will to say no. And I think it was also because I knew that she was doing it because she cared, and this is a way of showing that she cared.
Well, we'll pick that up next week as we discuss how you ended up in church and what that was all about. So thank you, Brian. Very intriguing story. And I think as we go through this series of radio broadcasts, we'll next week be talking about the power of God to deliver people and the power of the gospel. And so stay with us. Thank you so much, Brian. Nice
having you. Thank you for allowing me to be here.
This again is Pastor Bob DeWay from Twin City Fellowship. We're a non-denominational church in Minneapolis, Minnesota area. And you can contact us a couple different ways. We have a church website, TwinCityFellowship.com, and also the Critical Issues Commentary website, CICMinistry.org. There's a lot of material on both of those. Thanks for being with us, and we'll see you again next week.